This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Forget the frustration of picking commerce platforms when you switch your business to Shopify, the global commerce platform that supercharges your selling wherever you sell. With Shopify, you'll harness the same intuitive features, trusted apps, and powerful analytics used by the world's leading brands. Sign up today for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/tech, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/tech.
At Evernorth Health Services, we believe costs shouldn't get in the way of life-changing care. And we're doing everything in our power to make it possible. Behavioral health solutions that also keep your projections at their best? It's possible. Pharmacy benefits that benefit your bottom line? It's possible. Complex specialty care that cares about your ROI? It's possible. Because we're already doing it. All while saving businesses billions. That's Wonder made possible. Learn more at evernorth.com/wonder.
If you could go back to the beginning of time with regard to the internet and change it, what would you do?
I would have done some preemptive therapy for a lot of the Elon Musks of the world, I think.
Well, I would have hoped that some of the people were as mature as they were intelligent.
It is like a venture capital-based version of Muppet Babies.
Well, that's what we're talking with our guest about today. Are the architects of the internet innovators or man babies?
Man babies, you say? Well, we're going to talk to Kara Swisher this week and find out.
Welcome to What the Hack, the true cybercrime podcast. I'm Adam Levin.
I'm Beau Friedlander.
And I'm Travis Taylor.
Hey guys, I didn't think there was any way that we were going to top the episode that we had last week with Senator Elizabeth Warren, but we have something that is equally exciting. Because today we're talking with none other than tech journalist, co-founder of Recode, and author of Burn Book, Kara Swisher. Kara Swisher, welcome to What the Hack.
Hi.
Kara, I love the stories you tell in the book, pretty much the whole book. I mean, your conversations are irreverent. I think your observations are prescient and they're priceless.
Thanks so much.
Kara, I was just, years ago, I published this book by Speed Levitch. Mm-hmm. Doesn't matter, but there's quotes on the back by Georges Bataille, J. Edgar Hoover.
You got something from J. Edgar Hoover?
They didn't really give us quotes. And I have a question for you. Did Elon Musk really say you're an asshole and, yes. Well, you're right?
Yes, he did. Yeah. One in an interview that he did with me when we were arguing about Trump. About whether Trump would do the immigration ban. And I said he would, and Elon was convinced he wouldn't. And he could convince him not to if he was moving towards it, which was untrue. And then when he got mad at a tweet I did, so he sent me an email that said, you're an asshole. He also said my voice had become so shrill, only dogs could hear me. He said my heart was seething with hate, you know, stuff like that. Just your average. Yeah.
A true gentleman.
Yeah. I don't care.
Well, actually, what I hear is a true child.
Oh, my God. The book is littered with examples of these high-powered tech guys being children. For instance, when Kara met Mark Zuckerberg, mm-hmm. during their conversation, as she was leaving, she was handed his famous business card that said, I'm CEO, bitch. Mm-hmm.
So when I was prepping, I read this article by Claire Hoffman where you said the Silicon Valley elite were a lot of babies, basically.
Yeah, well, adult toddlers, I think, is the phrase I tend to use.
So what does it mean that man and women babies are running the internet?
Well, that's why we have what we have in a lot of ways. Now, look, we've got some amazing things. I'm not this person that's going to say everything sucks, because it doesn't. These are astonishing things. But a lot of the people who run these things have either because their own personal characteristics or because money, there's a real deleterious effect of money, have become, you know, they aren't formed enough to be responsible for the things they're responsible for, especially since so much of this technology has so many societal implications well beyond their ken. But that doesn't stop them from making decisions that affect, you know, vast swaths of the human race.
Speaking of money, in your book, you refer to yourself as a reportrepreneur.
Yeah.
What is that?
Oh, it's just a dumb word that some people use. Reporters who are entrepreneurs, media. I'm of the belief that media has to really become entrepreneurial. And if they're not, they're screwed, essentially. So I just this report entrepreneur who happens to be a reporter. So I created a lot of media businesses, and I continue to this day. And so that's what I was referring to.
And you were way ahead of the curve, like way before Substack existed. I think you saw that coming, mm-hmm. that journalists had to have a brand and develop that.
Well, that's actually one of the things we want to talk to you about. I mean, you have a new book. It's called Burn Book. And in it, you speak to some of the most powerful people in tech today.
Yep.
You definitely are not trying to make any new friends.
No.
But it seems like there were some people targeting you even before the book came out.
Yes.
Can you tell us what happened on Amazon before the release of Burn Book?
What happened was that once the book got popular, actually, and it was popular pretty quickly, and it's been on the bestseller list and stuff, but AI bots really essentially created books with my, an AI version of me, which is slightly porny. An AI avatar, and then it was books by, you know, Queen Bee talks about Silicon Valley. And so, you know, these are these worries we have about AI going forward, like ChatGPT and Claude and others, that it can create books out of whole cloth. And so there were all these books for sale on Amazon that I didn't write that looked like I wrote them.
Did they sound like you wrote them?
No, it just, you can take, I have so much material. I've written thousands and thousands of articles, done thousands of interviews. And so you could drag that all into LLMs and then sort of have a verisimilitude of what I'm saying, you know, it could, in terms of informational, they sound terrible and they're really shoddy products. And so yeah. It has happened not just to me. It happened to Savannah Guthrie. It happens to lots of authors as that, you know, you can upload, I don't know if you know this, 3 books an hour on Amazon. And so they have these bots just working away at various popular authors. I'm sure every single author has ripoff books that it's done to. It's really quite something.
And as far as you can tell, did that have any impact on either the pre-sales or the sales of your book?
I don't know. I just know that people were getting shoddy products in my name. It's sort of like, you know, there's a lot of people who buy Gucci, for example. I'm not comparing myself to Gucci, but it's a similar, it's the real deal. And then there's people outside that are selling Gucci products on the sidewalk and they run away when police show up. But it's as if they put the Gucci products, the crappy ones in the store and were selling them alongside good ones. It's just, they're just taking advantage of my IP, my intellectual property. And I don't particularly like that. And I don't particularly like Amazon facilitating it. And Amazon makes money. These shoddy products make money. I don't make any money on myself. And then the consumer loses because they get not what they thought they were buying, essentially.
There's nothing new about piracy and publishing. It goes back to, you know, the 19th century.
Yeah. But this is supersized. This is supersized and automated. It's not, that was by people who were doing it. And so it was a little artisanal. Now it doesn't matter. They can jack these things out in seconds. Like, and that's the thing. And then they can target and different things, you know, target advertising, target things. It puts any author or creator at a disadvantage. And it's happened in music. It happened in art and stuff like that. And it's fine if it's sort of buyer beware, but why should they take all the stuff I work for and remake it without paying me, essentially? 100%. If I wanted to do it, I'd be happy. Maybe, probably not, but who knows?
Well, as we alluded to earlier, the spamming of your name in the book title was done through Amazon's Kindle Direct self-publishing platform.
Yeah, that's it.
And, you know, that allows publishers or authors, rather, to self-publish. Mm-hmm. And it's a question that pops up pretty often in tech, which is, does the good of the program outweigh the bad, or is it sort of...
No, I mean, sure, they can do that, but why can't they monitor fakes? It's not fine. I think it's a great thing that people can self-publish. And that's a wonderful thing if they're actual... And I don't care if bots self-publish. I honestly don't, but use your own damn work, mm-hmm. right? Don't take mine, suck it in, and then put it back and then use my image and then also do a shitty image of me. That was another thing that irritated. I was like, can it look like me at least or something? But I was wearing earrings in one. I looked like I lived in Arizona and Sedona and did tarot readings in another. And so I don't know. I just feel like I should have control over my image.
Yeah. So that you're definitely not looking like someone from Sedona doing tarot reading.
Right. I don't.
No, not tired. At all.
In my opinion, a lot, if not all of the blame falls on Amazon.
Right. Mm-hmm.
You know, there's just so much out there. There's so many people out there. There's so many bots out there. And now, so the artisanal piracy that happened in the 19th century, or maybe even in the 50s, I think Tropic of Cancer was published under, you know, in Gotham, you had to go ask for it behind the counter and it wasn't always... And it wasn't always Herodias.
Right. You know, if they're going to run a retail operation, they've got to protect their products, essentially. Again, they could sell them as long as they were, as long as they say what they are. Like, you know, say what you are and say what it is. And if it's really taking my image, stop it. Just stop it. And they could do that. They can do it.
They could do it. Well, you know who else could do stuff that he doesn't do? Mark Zuckerberg.
Certainly. I talk about that a lot, obviously.
I know. In your book, you do. And I, you know, I just had an experience with Mark Zuckerberg, or because of him, where we did this episode with Elizabeth Warren last week. And I said mean things about Mark Zuckerberg.
Yeah, he scared her.
he should be. And also, long story short, Meta wouldn't let me promote the content. And
oh, really?
Yeah. And I found that to be the case down the line, because we do promote some posts whenever we say something nasty about the Zuck. So in your book, you mentioned, so Social Network came out and you wrote about how Zuckerberg was more concerned about how he was coming off there than the fact that he was a crazy egomaniac juggling digital chainsaws in a crowded room. Like how,
right?
Is that true about him? Is he really just...
What, interested in his image? Sure, like anybody else.
No, we all are. But what about the fact, at the expense of, you know, arguably he's done a real number on us all.
Well, this was as the beginnings of the number started, right? This was when I was interviewing him at that time. I've interviewed him since. But yeah, I think he, at the time, he thought of himself as a hero, right? You know, and I think he still does a little bit, in part. But he's a businessman. That's all I wanted to say is stop cosplaying that you're some Star Wars hero or Star Trek hero, and just you're just a capitalist, that's all. And you will make decisions based on your shareholders, you'll make decisions based on your self-interest. And you know, Mark, among all of them, is the least offensive at this point, you know, unfortunately, as a person. But I think, you know, anything that it took to grow this company, he would do. And he's not unlike the robber barons. He's not unlike J.P. Morgan or Henry Ford or the Rockefellers. And so that's all I wanted to say. It's like, look, the first line of the book is, so it was capitalism after all. And that's, and they would not, they think of themselves in a very dreamier way. And I don't, I just don't. I don't see them in a dreamy way at all.
Well, you know, I guess what I was getting at is Zuckerberg was arguably bootlegging. He was sort of a bootlegger of digital, of data. And I didn't really understand the Facebook business model because I wasn't paying close attention to it.
Advertising.
I think a lot of us weren't paying close attention to it, but it was advertising and it was about narrowcasting an ad.
Yeah.
Became the way that you make money. And how come it was allowed to metastasize the way it has?
Well, because the government never moved in, like every other industry has regulations around it, and including advertising, by the way, including television, including newspapers. They can be held liable. They can be, you know, there's all kinds of rules around privacy. The FCC governs the broadcast waves, but these people have nobody governing them. And so, I mean, ultimately the FTC does, but it's not been able to act in 25 years. They haven't done it. They're trying now, but this is 25 years into it. And so I think one of the things that's important to keep in mind is that it's really, it's just an industry that's the richest and most powerful people on the planet, which has no regulation put against it specifically the way every other industry does. And so ultimately, it's down to the government not regulating this around privacy, around data use, around data abuse, essentially. And instead, it gets dragged into a First Amendment argument, which these people are happy to argue, despite the fact that they do not protect the First Amendment. And they are not bound by the First Amendment. And that's one of the things they, whenever they start yelling about the First Amendment, I'm like, that is, you know, they haven't read it, because it has to do with government and not corporations. They can do whatever they want. And they do. But then when you say, why did you do this? They're like, not our responsibility.
So Bo and Adam, you guys know I'm a bit of a privacy geek, if you will.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, you are.
Yeah, totally. I really just don't like the idea that just about anyone can find you online, can find out where you live or your email address or your phone number or anything. I just think that entire idea is super creepy.
There's so much of my data already out there, but is there something that you can do?
Yeah, actually, you can use Delete Me. Delete Me is a service that pretty much does the heavy lifting for you, where they go to all the data brokers that they have on file. and just pull your data and delete it on a regular basis.
I use it. I like it. And they make it quick, easy, and safe to remove your personal data online.
Well, yeah, with these data brokers, they can accumulate huge amounts of your personally identifiable information. And if all that information gets into the hands of a bad actor, that opens you up to a lot of risk.
And if you act now, you can get 20% off your Delete Me plan when you go to joindeleteme.com/WTH and use promo code WTH. The only way to get 20% off is to go to joindeleteme.com/WTH and enter promo code WTH at checkout.
That's joindeleteme.com/WTH, promo code WTH, which stands for What the Hack. And we thank you for supporting Delete Me and What the Hack. Kara, last week we were talking to Elizabeth Warren about the Digital Consumer Protection Commission.
Yeah.
I'm pretty hopeful about it. How about you?
Maybe there should be a specific agency, but when you start calling it the Department of Information, it really does stick in the craws of Americans, right? And that's what they count on. They count on us being nervous about any agency that is in charge of our information. So I think there's a concern of the government, as there should be, by the way, because we've seen, whether it's the Snowden, whatever you think about Edward Snowden, they were spying on, they spy, the government spies. And so what my concern is that they haven't, there's not going to be, it's not going to happen. There's no move happening right now that's going to be ever regulating this stuff. And so what can we do that's similar that is not going to violate our First Amendment rules?
So in the last chapter of Burn Book, you talked about becoming too much of a creature of Silicon Valley. What does that mean?
I just think I worried about, you know, I knew these people really well. And when you have some distance from them, you begin to very much see, you know, there's two things. When you're a beat reporter, you need to talk to these people. You're doing news and you don't look up from your news. This happened. The same thing happens with White House reporters or people who cover Trump. They're like, then he did this today. Then he fell asleep in court. And they're not thinking of the bigger implications of what it means. Like, this guy falls asleep in court. He seems like cognitively disabled. Like, you know what I mean? You tend to just have the story. And so one of the things that was good for leaving Silicon Valley, although I go there quite a bit, was the idea that, just a second, let's look at this in a broader perspective. And that's when it occurred to me was the Trump meeting that they did. That was just so against everything they had told me. And I was like, okay, that's enough. That's enough of you, you know, taking and not giving, essentially.
Now, am I remembering right? That's around 2020 when you went back to DC.
I did during COVID. And so, yeah, I did around then. I still have a place in San Francisco and it's great. I love it. So,
but there was a shift there in the way that you were reporting on Silicon Valley. Yeah. Then?
Yes. Yeah, there was. Because I started to really focus in on the regulatory elements of it. And that was important.
So where are we with that? I mean, do you think that we're heading towards the tech utopia that we thought we might have back in the beginning? Is the genie out of the bottle?
I think we're very much stuck in the same. I just was interested in an interview with Maria Cantwell, who used to be a tech executive at a company called Real Networks. And she's been trying to pass a privacy bill for a while and she's closer. But she's certainly not close yet. And so it has to pass in this thing. But Senator Klobuchar tried, all these different people have tried, and it hasn't worked.
I don't know, did you happen to see this story yesterday that Senator Graham's phone was hacked? So someone was actually pretending to be Chuck Schumer. And he's a co-signer of the legislation that Elizabeth Warren's trying to get through on big tech, tech and big data. What are we... It just seems to me like I get that there are senators and senior members of our legislation trying to make a difference, but do they stand a chance against this gigantic machine?
These companies are so wealthy. These companies control the world, and they have more money than anything. And they don't. I think that's the part that they leave out is that their ability to control these companies is very limited. They have lobbyists, they've got money, they've got so much. I mean, I think I have seven PR people dealing with me, at least at any one day. And so I think it's just really difficult for people to understand the vast amount of money that is happening here.
I wonder, you know, what is the next thing that they're going to feverishly protect? I've noticed that Meta now in Instagram is, you know, making everything I do a question for Meta AI.
Yep.
And I'm like, okay, cool. I don't know if that's just, you know, a wrapper on something that was already there or if it's something new. But Travis, you're constantly talking about AI. I mean, literally, if I talk to Travis for more than, let's say 20 minutes, I leave feeling very bad about the world.
It's a gift and a curse.
Yeah, but you have this, you definitely are been, you think AI is the next...
I know it's the next thing. It's not horrible necessarily. It can be great. And what I'm saying is, guess what? What we really need to do is take all the good parts. The quote I had that's really critical in this book is the Paul Virilio quote, which is, when you invent the ship, you invent the shipwreck, which is a very important quote. And every technology has negative and positive aspects. It's a tool or a weapon. And so my question is, you invent the plane, you invent the plane crash. When you invent electricity, you invent electrocution. It's very clear. It's not like, listen, any freshman in college gets this. But my point was more that, why don't we have lighthouses? Why don't we have radar? Why don't we put the electrical stuff up in the sky so we don't touch it all the time? And so that's all I'm saying is, what is that? So if we're going to move forward to what is a quantumly more powerful technology that is going to control even more things and be so embedded into our world, why don't we just try to anticipate the bad things and mitigate the bad things and stress the great things, of which there are many. And there are many in this regard to everything we've gotten before, too. So,
yeah, I mean, if it gets me a guaranteed basic income, I'll be fine.
You could. We should be open to ideas around things like that. And so my whole thing is just like, it doesn't have to, you know, there's lots of things in the world where it has to be like this. It doesn't have to be like this. There's lots of different ways, especially since this technology is so groundbreaking. We don't have to do it the way we're doing it. And that was what I was stressing. It can be, there are better worlds and we can find them. And so that was sort of the focus I was trying to get it in the book, essentially.
Well, as far as AI is concerned here, what would a concrete version of a lighthouse be for that?
Do we want killer drones? No. Maybe we should bar them, just like we do with cloning, like we do with nuclear energy. It's not perfect, but at least we know what the rules of the road are. Okay, let's say, we need to have much more transparency into what's in these LLMs and where they're getting them from. Where's the provenance from? We need to have them mark things that are fake, that are generated by AI. Basic. Look, that's fake. Okay, thanks for knowing. I need to know that. Thank you. If you do things that are fraud, like that, this is a special kind of crime and then we have people in place in our society who, in our criminal justice system, et cetera, who know how to deal with these things. And so that's the kind of stuff I tend to focus in on.
And so, like with Cambridge Analytica and the kind of populist vote poisoning that was happening through... Right.
That wasn't as big a deal as people thought it was, but okay.
Well, but just as an example of data not being what it seems, or being used to do something that we didn't think it was doing.
Right, yeah. Mm-hmm.
AI is capable of being poisoned. So, you know, large language model could all of a sudden find that it is sourcing what it thinks it knows from things that are wrong and that are intentionally wrong.
That's correct.
How do you actually... What's the practical way of labeling that? I don't see the lighthouse in here. I see fog.
Well, no, it doesn't, because guess what? Planes are hard. Planes is hard. Pharmaceuticals is hard. You know, cars is real hard. You know, like, I'm sorry. It's such a lie that and that's what they rely on. And that's what they hope that we think they're magicians. And as we found out, you know, Elon Musk is such a good, he's a magician. He could do anything. He can't do anything. And by the way, he's deeply flawed. Nice to meet you. The fact that we make that we have this idolatry of innovators, and I love innovators. I consider myself an innovator in media, but I'm not without my faults. And that's my whole thing, is that we really got to stop acting as if these people have all the answers. They do not have all the answers. They 100% don't have all the answers. And that's just because they're rich, right? And now, of course, you have all these ridiculous people like venture capitalists giving us their thoughts on Ukraine. Like, no thanks. I think we'll just, you know, no.
Hard thanks.
Pass. Hard yeah. pass. Or the other day, I forget, Elon was giving some thoughts on cesarean sections. Like, that's he's a perfect example. Like, cesareans. I had one. I'm not going to listen to him. I have more expertise around cesareans than he does. And I feel like I'm going to go with me on this one. And so that's the kind of stuff. They wander over into areas they have no business wandering over, whether it's government or whatever. They certainly can give money to people. They can have their opinions, but they have real impact. And that's really my worry.
But why do we care about Elon Musk? I mean, as Bob pointed out earlier, he's quoted on the back of your book twice.
Because he is famous. He is the richest person in the world. That's why.
But he's a man-child.
He's a man. Of course that. But so what? He's still interesting. Why do we look at Trump all the time? He's interesting. Like, deny it as you... You know, I have always have people like, why are you talking about Trump? If we don't pay attention, he'll go away. He's not going away. Neither is Elon Musk. That's my favorite. Like, how dare you platform him? I'm like, hey, he got 70 million votes. So I'm sorry. I'm going to pay attention to it. I love always that, you know. There's all these tiskers on the, if we only ignore him, I'm like, no, no. And so Elon's the same way. I mean, I don't think we should take his word for it on cesareans or the Ukraine or anything else. Yeah, and I think he should, like any other citizen. I think what we do is, and this is just a common thing for this country particularly, we love a rich person. We really truly love a rich person. And so, great. He's a really great entrepreneur. The stuff he's done on cars, although right now he's having a little bit
of a bumpy road
and it's getting, and FYI, interestingly, I said this a year and a half ago, I was like, this is going the wrong way because there's going to be competition. He's obsessed with Twitter and spending a lot of time there. He's taken his eye off the ball. There's going to be competition. He hasn't put out a new car, except that's idiotic Cybertruck where the pedal doesn't work. And which is accelerator not working seems to me to be a big issue. Personally, I'm really concerned about that. And so lots of things are going wrong in his other businesses, which are arguably really interesting and good businesses. You know, so, you know, that's, he can do all that stuff all he wants. But we look at him because he's so powerful and so rich and has his hand in so many pots, including especially space and defense and stuff. And that's my concern.
Whether we're talking about scams, privacy issues, sextortion, misinformation, the internet has become a dark place in a lot of ways. Could that have been avoided?
Yes. Any kind of regulation. I mean, look, any technology is used. Like, look, Hitler used radio, and radio was also good. So it's just how people use it. This particular medium, you can hide in the shadows. You can be explicit. Like, Trump is a really good example of this. He really uses the internet really well. He does. Whether you like him or not, he uses it really well. And so I think we just have to anticipate problems. And that's the only thing. And in this case, it's a quantum level of power compared to the previous communication systems.
The question is, and maybe it's a simple question, but could all of the things that are wrong with the internet have simply been avoided?
Everything is going to be a weapon. Everything is always made, but it's also an asset. Like, I don't know, like on the whole, cars, pretty good, but also, hello, like that's the thing. And a lot of things I'm sure they couldn't have anticipated climate change back then. They just didn't. Now we have to. And one of the things I always look at, there's a movie that I love, Origins, Ava DuVernay did on Isabel Wilkerson. My feeling is, at the end of the movie, they were talking about, this was about racism and caste systems, and it went through not just here in this country, but in India and else and in Germany. So they were trying to link them all in a caste system rather than racism per se. And it was really, she's amazing. Isabel Wilkerson deservedly won the Pulitzer Prize for this. And one of the things she said is at the end is like, look, this house has mold in the basement. The foundation is broken. That's the people who built it before. They didn't build it right. But it doesn't mean we can't. It's our house now and we got to fix it, right? Like, what are we going to do to fix it now? Let's stop focusing in on the fact that it's broken. Let's figure out what we have to do. So here we are, and we're at another Cambrian explosion, which is AI, this new AI. AI has been around forever. And what are we going to put in place? And what power do we have to do so? And that's really That's my focus.
The book is called Burn Book, A Tech Love Stories by Kara Swisher, and published by Simon & Schuster, available wherever you get books. Kara, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you so much.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
You know, one of the things that I take away from talking with Kara is we're so screwed. No, honestly, she seems like an old soldier. An old soldier who's seen a lot of stuff. And when I am sitting there with a horrified look on my face, she's like, yeah, what did you expect?
Mm-hmm. Well, I think she's not only seen a lot of stuff, but she's foreseen a lot of stuff.
Well, but, you know, I have to say that, you know, Senator Warren was talking about that. There's some effort on the part of lawmakers to make a change to the way tech works. But I didn't hear that Kara Swisher was there. I didn't hear that the people who could actually fix this were saying anything about it. And I have to say, my guess is that nothing's going to change.
It seems likely, but one really minor fix, I think, to existing legislation would be probably beneficial, and that's to raise the age of COPPA, the Children's Online Privacy Protection Act.
Wow. That is a violin I have seen you play before.
but Travis, what age?
Right now, it protects your privacy up to age 13. And in my opinion, as long as you are still not regarded as a legal adult, in other words, 18, you should still fall under that protection.
I agree with you.
No. You know, there was a cartoon when I was a kid. It's a picture of a little kid standing next to some untied shoes saying, she's 2.5 years old. She refuses to tie her shoes. And then there was a picture of the same woman at 95 and says she's 95 years old and she refuses to tie her shoes. I have to say that it's cool. It's a good idea. But like, I think people should age out at about 125.
Yeah, that's totally fair. I think at the same time, though, between introducing new legislation or just modifying what's already on the books, the latter is a lot easier.
No, I'm not saying I'm being reasonable.
And one of the things I've noticed, if you look at all the different pieces of legislation that are floating out there between data protection, privacy protection, and creation of commissions and bureaus, is the fact that they each seem to be saying almost the same thing, but generally in pieces. The Digital Consumer Protection Commission seems to be much more holistic than anything else, but a lot of people who are experts in the field, who are commentators and pundits and reporters like Kara Swisher, I think they're not convinced it's ever going to happen because most of the time Congress can't agree on the day of the week. So Kara talked about lighthouses. What would your lighthouse be?
Well, I'm going to think about it while I let Travis answer.
Increasing the age of COPPA to 17.
My lighthouse would be two things. Continuing to teach people about cyber best practices and digital and cyber literacy. I can't emphasize that enough. And a lot of the people we've had on over the years have been very supportive of that concept, but that's what we have to keep doing.
You are a consistent man.
I try to be.
You succeed.
Oh?
I live in the woods, live nowhere near the water. I don't have a lighthouse and I don't care.
So in other words, you're living under a bottle cap at the bottom of Loon Lake.
I don't think there's any way to fix it. I don't really care what all these man babies are doing. They suck. The internet sucks. It's not fixable. End of story.
We have a podcast on the internet. What would you replace it with? The three of us walking through the hills like minstrels?
Don't mistake my disdain for all things digital for my disdain for a paycheck. That's stupid. I will take money if it's given to me. But
so will the tech guys.
Listen, That's the whole point. But the whole point is, no, I don't think that the internet is fixable. I think that there's good things about it. I think there's horrible things about it. The horrible things aren't going away. How about that?
Someone put on his grumpy pants today.
Well, whatever. I only have grumpy pants.
Look, there's a whole lot going on with the internet. We know, and we know that there are attempts both in Europe and the United States to make things better, mm-hmm. to come up with a better regulatory scheme. But while we're waiting, and could be waiting a long time, we have to put protections in place ourselves. We have to be proactive.
My position is, put your grumpy pants on.
Well, you are consistent, aren't you?
We all are. And now it's time for our tinfoil swan.
Our paranoid takeaway to keep you safe on and offline.
Travis, my dear, what is on your mind this week?
I had something weird happen with a QR code.
What kind of weird?
My sister asked me to make a QR code for her therapy practice just to put on a flyer. So I generated one on a website, and it all seemed pretty straightforward.
QR codes are those little black and white boxes that you scan with your phone to lead you to a website or app online.
So, Travis.
Yes?
Do you like your sister?
She has her moments.
Well, I ask because you hate QR codes.
Yeah, true. I've always been pretty paranoid about them, but now I'm even more paranoid because after making this QR code, I got bombarded with ads directed at my sister's business.
That's not exactly surprising. I mean, free generally means advertisers.
Yeah, definitely. And trackers don't just record your physical location and the sites you visit when you go online. They also track how you interact with them.
Yeah. I mean, any kind of link shortening service, QR code, generator, link aggregator, all of them. Yeah, there are just so many different ways to engage with you and then get stuck to you like gum on your shoe digitally.
Ew.
It's true, though.
Even if you're in incognito mode, websites can link your IP address to what you're doing on that site and then use that to figure out who you are and what you're interested in.
Okay, so what can people do?
I mean, other than staying offline entirely, not much. But if your concern is being tracked back to your IP address, you can use a VPN.
And companies like Mozilla, well, they do offer privacy-centric solutions to make you harder to track.
Right, but at the end of the day, privacy solutions are generally made to hide where you go online. The minute you answer a call to action,
buy, subscribe, and sometimes just click a link.
Yeah, there you are, for all the bots in the world to see, and websites, and data specialists, all that.
Come on, Bo, you know there's no free lunch.
Yeah, and there's no such thing as a truly free service online. Even if it's something as basic as a QR code generator, there's going to be strings attached.
Well, come on, running a website costs money. So if you find yourself on a website that provides a free service, they're making money off your data.
Yeah, I mean, and maybe just pay for whatever it is you need.
And that's our tinfoil swan. What the Heck with Adam Levin is a production of Loud Tree Media. You can find us online at adamlevin.com and on Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook at Adam K. Levin.